This morning we celebrate that Jesus Christ is risen. We celebrate the fact that the tomb was empty. We celebrate the fact that no body was found. And in an interesting thing that occurred to me as I was preparing this, there are a lot of things that separate us as churches, Mennonites, Pentecostals, whatever. But the one uniting fact that we all unite in is the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And that is such an encouraging thing. We, you know, we may disagree on baptism. We may disagree on some minor points of theology. We may disagree on worship styles. But the one thing that we can agree on as churches is the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. This morning, I'll give you a little background to where I was this morning, where I'm preaching this morning. We're preaching out of John 10. We're talking about John 10 this morning. A few weeks ago, I was in a youth leader retreat and was singing a song. For the life of me, I can't remember what song it was, but I was beginning to think about this sermon, and the word shepherd came into my mind. And so for you this morning, that's the focus that I want to focus on this morning is the word shepherd. And maybe you feel like you are in need of a shepherd this morning, and Jesus Christ is that shepherd for us. So in John chapter 10, Jesus speaks to the Pharisees in a language that they will hopefully understand. But to give you a little understanding here, we need to back up just to John chapter 9 for just a moment. And Jesus sets us up for John 10 by going through John 9. Jesus heals a blind beggar in John 9, and the religious leaders question the beggar and about who healed him. And the leaders end up removing the beggar from the synagogue because of his belief in Jesus. As he is cast out of one family, Jesus, the good shepherd, welcomes him in to his flock and confronts the Pharisees on their spiritual blindness. And John 10 continues on where Jesus confronts the Pharisees on their blindness, and he talks to them in a language that they understand, the language of the sheep and the shepherd. And so that's where we are this morning. So if you have your Bibles, John chapter 10, verse 1 to 21, and I'm reading out of the ESV version this morning. "Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has bought out all of his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep do not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I come that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them up and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, I lay my life down for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also. They will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father." There was a discussion amongst the Jews because of these words. Many of them said, "He is a demon, and he's insane. Why listen to him?" Others said, "These are not the words of those who is oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?" So first, I want to focus on two I am statements that is found in found in our section here. So the first I am statement is Jesus declares that I am the gate. In verse 7, Jesus declares that, and other translations may say door, and he is the gate for the sheep. Sheep herding was probably a little different in that time than what it would be now. From my understanding, the sheep were free during the day, and then they were gathered up at night, put into a cave or some type of closed-in area, and the shepherd would literally would lay down on the ground to protect, to close off the sheep, to keep them in. In verse 8, Jesus speaks of robbers and thieves as the ones who came before him. Some may interpret this to be a shot at people such as Moses or Elijah or Jeremiah or other prophets. Those leaders are the ones, but it's not. Those are the leaders before him that point the sheep to the true shepherd, that point the sheep to Jesus. Those leaders were trying to bring the sheep to the shepherd. The thieves and the robbers that he is speaking about are the men in front of him, the Pharisees, the shepherds who are false shepherds, who don't care. These are the men who are shepherds, but rather than protecting the sheep, find themselves leading them astray, sacrificing them. The gate is a way to our salvation. As the gate, the shepherd offers his sheep safety. He would provide them a safe place from thieves and robbers. Safety for the sheep would come in no other way than through the shepherd. As the door, Jesus is the only path to safety and salvation. He has given us a plan for life, whereas the thief has a plan to kill, steal, and destroy, but the shepherd has a plan to give you life. His plan, according to Psalm 23, which David says, is to lead you to green pastures. I love that image that this morning with the door opening and shutting, but leading you into green pastures. It's not a pasture of death. It's not a sacrifice. It's a pasture of life. And I hope you take courage in that. The second I am statement that Jesus gives to us is, I am the good shepherd. Jesus states in verse 11 repeatedly that he is the good shepherd. Unlike the thieves and robbers of before, he's a good shepherd. He cares for his sheep. He is the shepherd and we are the sheep. What makes him a good shepherd? Throughout this entire section, you will see an underlying focus of sacrifice. Every action that he takes is an act of sacrificial love for his sheep. Everything he does is for the well-being of his sheep. Every action is for the love of the sheep. He truly does love his sheep. He truly does love his people. And just like the shepherds who lay down their life to protect the sheep, Jesus also laid down his life to protect us. Jesus is our good shepherd, and he speaks of four things throughout this passage that he does to care for us, his sheep. Firstly, the good shepherd protects his sheep. When we moved to Morden, we unknowingly moved into a highly populated rental area, and we have some great neighbors, but there's clearly a difference between those who own their property and those who rent their property. If any of you live near rental properties, you know that the difference that is. And there's something different about owning your property, right? You care for your property, right? You think about things. You think about when it rains. You think about where the water goes, and you think about all those little things. You think about the face value of your house and all of those things. But as a renter, you don't care about those things. I remember when we first got married and we rented, it was just, you just cared that you had a roof over your head. And if the fridge broke, well, it's not your fridge. Somebody else pays for it, right? And that's the mentality that Jesus is speaking here, is that there is a group of people that don't care about the investment. But Jesus is the true shepherd. He cares for his sheep. In John 10:12, Jesus compares the life of a shepherd versus that of a hired hand, implying that the Pharisees, who he is speaking to, are the hired hands. The shepherds would watch over the flock with great intention. They would care because these are their sheep, right? This is his. And if one got away, that would actually cost him, right? That would actually cost him. The hired hand would simply be a hired hand, right? He's just paid simply to watch. He is not much more than a scarecrow, just to scare away the wolves and to keep the wolves away. And I know the hired hand would attempt to try to do his best. I know the hired hand would try to care, but he doesn't have that connection to the sheep as the shepherd do. The hired hand doesn't own the sheep. If he lost one, he probably wouldn't lose any sleep over that night, and he would still get paid. But the shepherd is the one who cares. So why on earth does Jesus bring up this topic of hired hand in the story? The Pharisees were the hired hands, and they claimed to be the shepherds, but they had no investment in the people. They claimed to care for the people, but the moment that life got scary, the moment that life got difficult, they fled. They didn't have much invested in the sheep, and they scattered quickly. When the wolves came, they found that those shepherds, the false shepherds, were the ones running away. And unlike the hired hands, Jesus has a lot invested in us. 1 Corinthians 7:23 tells us that he has paid a high price for you. Right there. That is the price that he paid for you. That is the high price that he paid for you. He cared so much that you, so much for you to exist, that he paid his price on the cross so that you can exist. That is a high investment. He cares. He cares a lot that you are here today. If the wolves come and attack, we have a shepherd that is not going anywhere. He is determined to stick it out and defend his sheep. Do you hear that? Your shepherd is not going anywhere. You have a shepherd who's going to stay right in front of you. Doesn't matter the size of the wolves. Doesn't matter how many wolves there will be. You have a shepherd that is going to stand in front of you and protect you. This verse is quite the contrast to Ezekiel chapter 34, which also speaks of a shepherd, where Ezekiel condemns the shepherds who not only look out for themselves, rather than protecting the flock, they use it for their own self-gratification. I'm going to read a little passage here out of Ezekiel chapter 34, verses 2 to 6. Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, even to the shepherds, thus says the Lord God, the shepherds of Israel who have been feeding yourselves, should not the shepherds feed the sheep? You eat the fat, you clothe yourselves with the wool, you slaughter the fat ones, but you do not feed the sheep. The weak you have not strengthened, the sick you have not healed, the injured you have not bound up, the strayed you have not brought back, the lost you have not sought, and with force and harshness you have ruled them. So they were scattered because there was no shepherd, and they became food for the wild beasts. My sheep were scattered, they wandered all over the mountains and on every hill. My sheep were scattered all over the face of the earth with none to search or seek for them. Ezekiel goes after those shepherds because they didn't care for the sheep. The sheep were merely just a sacrifice. They were merely just meat and wool. Whether they cared for the sheep or people, there really was no difference between these shepherds. They were doing the same thing. They fed themselves rather than the sheep. And then instead of dying for the sheep were the first things to go. Instead of laying their life on the line for the sheep were merely just a means to an end. What Jesus is declaring in John 10 is that he is a much different shepherd than that. He is a shepherd that cares about his people. He is a shepherd that is invested in you. He is a shepherd that loves you. This isn't just a job for him. This isn't just, you know, at 5 o'clock he hangs up his hat and ends the day. This is a calling for him. This is a lifestyle. Jesus declares that I will never stop caring for people. Instead of you being the sacrifice, Jesus says that I will be the sacrifice. I will put my life on the line to protect you. The good shepherd knows his sheep. I found this little joke here. Bear with me if it's a little cheesy, but a shepherd was looking for a sheep one day on the side of a deserted road when suddenly a man in a brand new Porsche comes screeching to halt, and the driver, a well-dressed, very wealthy man, says to the shepherd, if I can tell you how many sheep you have, will you give me one of them? The shepherd looks at the young man and then looks at the large flock of grazing sheep, and he replies, okay. the young man parks the car and he gets out his computer and his cell phone and he connects it and he logs into the NASA website and he's looking at GPS coordinates and all sorts of high-tech things like that. And he prints out the sheet and he says to the shepherd, "You have exactly 1,586 sheep." Rather surprised, the shepherd replies, "That's correct. You can have your sheep." The young man takes an animal and puts it in the back of his Porsche. I'd like to see that. Just as the man is about to drive off, the shepherd asks him, "If I guess your profession, will you return my animal to me?" The young man answers, "Yes, why not?" The shepherd says, "You are an IT consultant." The consultant says, "How did you know?" "Very simple," answers the shepherd. "Firstly, you came here without being called. Secondly, you charge me a fee for something that I already know. And thirdly, you don't understand anything about my business. Now, can I have my dog back?" The good shepherd knows, he knows his sheep. The good shepherd knows his sheep. He knows us. He knows us as his sheep. And in Psalm 23, David declares that the Lord is his shepherd. "I shall not be in want." David has no needs because the shepherd is so good. The shepherd cares for him so much. He has no needs. He didn't have needs because the good shepherd knew what he needed. The good shepherd knows us by name. The good shepherd knows you. The good shepherd knows who you are. He knows your needs. He knows that your needs are different than the needs of your neighbor. He knows that your needs are different than the person in another side of the country. The good shepherd independently knows each of us and what we need. We're all in the same flock, but each sheep is different. The good shepherd knows what you need and is different than each person. Jesus says in verse 14, "I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me." Not only does the shepherd know us, but in order for there to be a relationship, he expects us to know him. That is the relationship, us knowing him. Sheep are often thought of as unintelligent animals, and in a lot of sermons, usually the preacher will, they're classified as dumb. And I'd like to correct that. I think they're actually rather intelligent animals, but I think their stubbornness is mistaken as stupidity. I've been told that sheep actually do recognize the voice of a shepherd, and it's hard to believe that, but I watched this YouTube video doing a little research and development, and I watched this YouTube video where three different people went to this flock of sheep, and they used this one command that the shepherd gave to them, but all three, they would shout this out, and none would move at all. And then the farmer came in, and he had this just one distinct voice, this one call, and the moment they heard it, the ears perked up. The sheep knew who the shepherd was. The sheep knew, and just after a few seconds, all of a sudden, all the sheep were at the fence, just wanting to be with that shepherd. Do we recognize the voice of God? As the verse says, "I know my own and my own know me." Do we recognize God's voice? When he calls, do your ears perk up? The sheep in the YouTube video I watched, they weren't some trained circus animals or super sheep or anything like that. They were, the only unique feature is that they'd spend a lot of time with their shepherd. To recognize God's voice and his calling doesn't require years of education. It doesn't require some special spiritual gift, but it does require that we do spend a lot of time with him. After work on occasion, I find myself, I'll watch Rex and allow Jamie to go out for a walk or whatever, and it never fails. We're doing just fine. And then all of a sudden mom walks in and it's just tears and it's, "Oh man, it's been horrible sitting with this man." Sometimes I kind of feel like it's mom and then there's the other guy in the house. It kind of feels that way. We're doing just fine. And then all of a sudden it's like, "Oh, mom's here. I got to be with mom." And it's, you were doing just fine. But why the reaction? Because he knows his mom's voice. The mom, Jamie knows her son, and the son knows her mom, knows his mom. They spent a lot of time together. This morning, if your complaint is that I just can't hear God's voice, my encouragement to you is to spend time with the shepherd. Plain and simple. If you want to know his voice, spend time with him. On a busy week, when I'm running around and I feel like I just haven't spent time with my wife, I feel disconnected. I feel like we just haven't talked. You know those weeks, right? Where it's just life is busy, and you just haven't connected. I don't know her. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happening for her. It's just I need to spend time with her. The same thing goes with your Savior. If you don't know him, you just need to spend time with him. You need to come to him and spend time with him. A deeper relationship with God comes with spending time with him. Do you recognize God's voice? Can you distinguish it from other voices? Earlier, I spoke of Jesus warning us about thieves and robbers coming in to take the sheep. And then the thieves often had a hard time stealing the sheep because they were heavy. And the stubbornness, they would stand still. They would not follow the voice of an outsider. If we can recognize God's voice, we can stand firm and ignore those other voices. We can't be misled. If we know God's voice, we can't be misled away from the true shepherd. And I know we all think, there's no way that I can be misled. There's no way that I can be led astray by a false voice. There's no way. You may not recognize the name Vernon Howell, but you may recognize the name David Koresh. David obviously the name was connected to King David, and Koresh is the Persian name for Cyrus the Great. A very deliberate name. And he thought he was the Messiah. He thought he was the Son of God. And Koresh was a leader of the cult, the Branch Davidians, and at least 80 people, if not more, were following him. They were willing to put their life on the line in a 51-day standoff because they believed who he was. They heard his voice, and they thought he was a voice of reason, a voice of authority. My guess is that Koresh preached a gospel that people enjoyed, that he prayed on weak people, that he prayed on people that thought they knew God's voice. And how did those 80 people get to the point of a 51-day standoff? They just didn't know God's voice. They couldn't tell the difference between God's voice and an imposter. Now, I realize that that's a long way down the line, but do we recognize God's voice? Can we recognize it amongst the other voices? Because I know sooner or later it's going to get harder and harder to tell the difference between the voice of God and the other voices. And we're going to need to know what that difference is. He knows you, but do you know him? Point number 3, the good shepherd pursues his lost sheep. Jesus says, I have other sheep, but not of this pen. He says that in verse 16. These other sheep that he was referring to were the Gentiles. And the Pharisees were led to believe that they had the one true path to salvation. But as Jesus spoke before, he is that door. The Pharisees, they don't have the door. They don't own the door. Jesus is the door to salvation. And he's made salvation available to all of his sheep. Not just Jews, not just Gentiles, but all of his sheep. He made salvation available. Because of the cross, salvation is now available to all of us. This means that regardless of my family background, my personal history, my credit history, I can be saved. It's not exclusive to Mennonites or Pentecostals or Lutherans, Baptists, Presbyterians. Salvation is available to all. The flock, when we get to heaven, I think we're going to be surprised at how big that flock is. I think we're going to be amazed to see just who is there. The shepherd lays his life on the line for all of his sheep, all of the sheep, not just for the really attentive sheep, not just for the best looking sheep or the high maintenance sheep. He deeply loves all of his sheep, and he wants each of us to be in his flock. This week in junior youth, we were talking about God's the love of God and the example of Jesus on the cross, and I got thinking about God's unconditional love for us. and just how much he loves each of us, and he has a love for his lost sheep, the sheep that run away. There's no conditions to God's love. Whenever you sign up for a cell phone or whenever you sign up for a credit card, there's always little conditions. There's always fine print. There's no fine print when it comes to God's love. God will love you no matter what you do. And I'm always baffled by that. It's always hard to understand, but God will love you no matter what you do. And we may think, surely I have to be a good person for God to love me. No, that's not the case. God will love you no matter what. Surely I have to go to church for him to love me. No, that's not the case. He loves you whether you're here on Sunday or not. Unconditional love means no conditions. I can do nothing and he still loves me. I can even run in the opposite direction and he still loves me. But he loves us so much that he will pursue us as we run away. Running away is not a relationship. He wants a relationship with you. He wants to spend time with you. The good shepherd wants to know his sheep. The shepherd knows us, but do we know the shepherd? When I think of unconditional love, I can't help but think of the story of the prodigal son. And when the son leaves, I have this image of a dad sitting on the porch, waiting for his son to return. And then suddenly, as on the horizon, the dad spots the son, and he just hightails it off that porch, and he starts running to his boy, and he gives him a hug. And the dad accepts the son back in, but no conditions. He doesn't say, straighten up, and then you can come home. No, he just welcomes him home. The boy returned home, and the dad hugged him and welcomed him in, and they had a party. Unconditional love means that no matter the size of the mistake, God will take me back. Unconditional love means that the cross paid for all of our mistakes. If you think that your transgression, that your sin, that your history is so big that you cannot come back to God, you are deeply mistaken. If you think that you've done something in your life that is just too horrendous, too awful, that God will never take you back, that's simply not true. There is nothing so big that he can't forgive. The cross is all about Jesus taking all of our transgressions and burying them forever. Before knowing Christ, Paul made it his life goal to make life for Christians terrible. Acts 8 verse 3 says, Saul began to destroy the church. Going from house to house, he dragged off men and women and put them in prison. And if you think that your transgression is bigger than that of Paul, he did a lot of things wrong. One chapter later, he's at a meeting with Jesus, and everything changes, and now instead of destroying the church, now he's trying to build it up. If Jesus can forgive Paul, he can forgive you. If Jesus can forgive Peter for denying him three times, he can forgive you. If you truly feel like a lost sheep, Jesus can forgive you. Do you know how much Jesus loves his sheep? Matthew 18:12 says this, if a man has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountain and go in search of the one that went astray? He relentlessly pursues his sheep. Maybe you have someone in your house who is that lost sheep. Maybe you have a son, maybe you have a brother, cousin, someone who has wandered away from the flock. He relentlessly pursues the sheep. He never gives up on his sheep. He doesn't stop. There's times where we feel like it's just like there's no hope. There's no hope. There's nothing saving that person. But Jesus does not give up. He relentlessly pursues his sheep. Fourth point here, the good shepherd has the authority. Jesus cares so much about his sheep, as well as the other sheep that he spoke about in verse 16, that he not only decides to lay his life down, but he takes it back up again. It didn't end in death. It didn't end on Friday. It was an incredible, miraculous thing that Jesus did for us on Good Friday, but it didn't end there. We celebrate today that it didn't end there. We celebrate that he took his life back up. Was he forced to do this? Peter spoke a little bit about this on Friday. No, he wasn't forced to do this. Yes, men led him there, but he chose to lay down his life on that day. Was Jesus a martyr, just like Stephen, who was caught in the wrong place at the wrong time? Was this a plan where things just got out of control? Jesus answers this in verse 18. John 10, verse 18, he says, "No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord." This was all in the plan. This was no accident. What we must understand is that everything that happened on that day, on the cross 2,000 years ago, was all a part of a plan. This was not a plan that was failed or a system of events out of control. The resurrection wasn't God's undo button. It was planned. Jesus laid down his life intentionally so that he could take it back up again. He had Friday in mind, but with Sunday as well. The death and the resurrection, everything was planned. Jesus was in control of all the events. He laid down his life voluntarily. In that moment, the good shepherd put aside himself and put on the sin of man and died. And 3 days later, he took up his life again. 2 Corinthians 5:21 says this, "For our sake he made him to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God." Jesus goes on to say later in verse 18, he says, "I have the authority. I have the authority to lay it down, and I have the authority to take it back up again. This charge I have received from my Father." The Pharisees were probably wondering, who gave you the authority? Who gave you that authority? God didn't give you that authority. Who gave you that authority? You're not God. You have no authority. Jesus says, "I have the authority to do this. Because God and I, we are one." Which he actually, later on, verse 30, he says that. Spiritual parallels aside, I believe the Pharisees could relate a lot to what Jesus was speaking about. He was talking about sheep and shepherds. They got that. They understood. But the moment that Jesus said, "I have the authority to lay it down. I have the authority to take my life back up again." This was a different game for the Pharisees. This changed it. This, all of a sudden, they were speaking a language where it was like, "You don't have the authority." Verse 19 says, "There was again a division amongst the Jews because of these words." Verse 20, "Many of them said he was a demon and he's insane. Why listen to him? Others said, these are not the words of the man of one who is oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?" In their mind, only God had that authority to make that. Only God had authority to heal, to raise himself up again. Only God should do the things like this, man. God would respect the law, right? God would respect. God wouldn't heal on the Sabbath. God wouldn't associate with sinners. In their eyes, this man certainly was not the Son of God. Claims like this created a division. And some wanted to believe, but some could not. You will notice in the start of that verse, it says, "There was again a division." This was not a new thing. Back in John 9, the men were also, these Pharisees were divided over Jesus. Some thought that Jesus couldn't be from God because he healed on the Sabbath. That's just something that God wouldn't do. While others were wrestling to understand how the other group were wrestling to understand how a sinner could do something so miraculous as what Jesus did. I said it before, and I'll say it again. In church, we can be divided on a lot of things. We can be divided on building plans, on piano purchases, on decorating, on structure. We can be, even in this church, we can be divided on some minor points of theology. But the one thing that unites us in this room is the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. That is a closed door. That is the one thing that we hold on to. There is no disputing that. No disputing that. There's a lot of gray areas. That is not a gray area. That's black and white. He died, was buried, and he rose again. We are united with millions of Christians today who celebrate that. In closing, very simply, I want to ask you today, is Jesus your good shepherd? Matthew 25 speaks about the final judgment, and there will be a sorting of the sheep and the goats. The shepherd will be sorting the flock, the sheep on the goats, the sheep on the right and the goats on the left. The sheep will be welcomed by Jesus, but the goats will depart from him. I must ask, are you a sheep in his flock, or are you a goat? The Pharisees were divided, and you may also be divided in your decision of who Jesus is. Maybe for you today, Jesus is just a good, just a shepherd who did something, or maybe he's just a dead prophet. Is Jesus your Lord and Savior, or just a reason for two holidays in March? Is the cross a sign of salvation for you, or is it just an empty symbol on a car? Are you a sheep in his flock? Today as a church, we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ, that he gave up his life to give us a path to salvation. We celebrate that the good shepherd chose to lay down his life for his sheep. We celebrate that the tomb was empty and that no body was found. He truly is a good shepherd, and he cares for each of us enough to lay down his life for us, for his sheep. But he cared enough for us to also take it back up again. He protects us, he knows us, and he loves us. May we rejoice in that.